CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Vena. Businesses are under increased pressure to perform, and research has shown that finance is among the top professions that is experiencing burnout as a result of this increased stress. As CFOs, it's our job to protect our people from burning out and making sure we don't lose valuable team members. But this can be a difficult balance to strike, particularly when we ourselves may be feeling spread thin. My guest today, Ruchi Kasawali, has extensive experience building and leading accounting and finance teams. Ruchi is passionate about optimizing human and system resources, and she has some helpful tips on how to prevent burnout for accounting and FP&A teams. Ruchi, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Melissa, for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
You have a tremendous amount of experience building up and developing teams. Can you start just describing what some of that experience has been?
I'm a very people's person, and that's why building teams, developing teams comes very naturally to me. Even though growing up in accounting and finance, people think we are nerdies, but we still like people. So I've built teams from ground up, from a team of one, which would be me, to a team of over 5,200 people across boundaries. So I've built offshore teams in India, Ireland, and Singapore, and I've run a team of one also.
Before we dive into some of my questions for today, curious, have you ever experienced burnout yourself?
Yes, like being in finance and accounting for over 15 years, if I had not experienced burnout, it would be an anomaly, right? Our function is so demanding that burnout is a natural phenomenon, but identifying good burnout, bad burnout, or good stress versus bad stress is an important thing to note. I did have burnout, especially after taking two companies public, because you're in that rush, adrenaline rush that, oh no, I can do it yet all over again. But recognizing that this is not just stress and we can do it again, but it is getting to burnout was an important part of my life.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because stress is going to be inevitable when you think about working in a finance function or in a business in general. But it's knowing when it's okay stress, it's good stress, versus when it's starting to hit that dangerous period, because we can't avoid all of it. And so I think it's going to be great to talk more about what are some of the ways that we can know when it's okay and also make sure that we're avoiding it turning into complete burnout, which is not good. So looking forward to this conversation.
Likewise, there's a lot to talk about on this topic.
So studies have shown that post-COVID, burnout is on the rise, even as we've started to go back to some normalcy in work. And in some areas, people have returned to the office and those boundaries between work and life have started to be reestablished. What do you think is contributing to this?
I think there are a few things that add up to the new normal that we would call, which is after COVID. One is work from home opportunities before COVID were luxury that some people used to have, not everybody. And nowadays, it's become somewhat a requirement, an unsaid requirement, especially for new folks who are coming in. But on the other side, the demands of the job have also increased that much. There's no line anymore between your personal life and your work life. Earlier, when we used to go to work, there was commute time, after which, when coming back home, it was your life. Nowadays, there's no commute. So there's no definition of a separation here, which has led to unexpected expectations, right? Unrealistic expectations, which is like, hey, my boss wants something at 8:30. Even though I'm in the middle of something else, putting kids down or dinner or something, I'll have to jump on the computer and get that done because there is no line. And that's one of the reasons, especially after COVID, that has led to more burnout. Having no definition, no separation is a key reason.
Blurred both ways, because I think as well, sometimes, you know, when you're working at home, we've all done it now. Sometimes there's expectations of your family on you as well at times when you're working. And that comes with different levels of stress that I didn't really appreciate previously, because when you were away at the office, they weren't expecting something of me. But of course, when you're home and your kids see you and they're asking for help, it's hard to say, well, I'm working right now or I'm doing this. And so I think the stresses are with the blurred lines are coming both ways. And as the employee, you're caught in the middle of this, trying to really balance it all, which it becomes quite a juggling act.
If you step back a little bit on when, let's say, the pandemic started and we were all supposed to work from home. At that time, we were all in that happy mode that, hey, I get to spend time with my family, stay with my family, do work and be at home. You know, the first year was super productive. Everybody was in a happy stress environment, trying to juggle things, still trying to figure out, but trying to juggle things. As we go more into this environment, the demands of the family and demands of work have become equal. Like with young kids or elderly at home, you have to take care of them and also deliver, if not more, at least at the same level. So that's added to more stress. And this I would call a little bit of a bad stress, which has led to burnout. So this is a combination of, you know, how do we separate good stress and bad stress? Good stress was good when we started with the pandemic because we were all eager to deliver our best, even if we were not in the office. But bad stress is when you have no idea, you have to deliver so many things, not professionally, but personally also.
When I also think about times of stress in work environments through my own career, some of the most stressful times, I think I managed to get through because we had the social connections around us that were helping us to fuel each other to get through it to the other side. I think about that pressure cooker, there's a deadline coming up and you've got to get something out. You had others around you who were sharing in that collective stress and you joke with each other, or somebody would step in and say, hey, I'll help you out there because I can see you really need this to get done. Let's get you out of here, get you home. And I think that now employees often feel more alone in doing their work or alone in the stressful times because you can't see and feel that same level of support around you. What are your thoughts about that and some of the things we could do to help with that?
So I totally agree that, you know, especially when we are in a quarter and month and close situation, it's all hands on deck and everybody is putting in their best effort, right? Which is like everybody's sharing the stress level and it's a team stress therapy, if you want to call it, because we're all in it together. And when there are certain teams or certain functions where they have to work by themselves, then you don't have their shared responsibility of the stress. And that's where you have to recognize that people need that social interaction, either to share the stress or to celebrate the stress. Like, you know, stress is not always a bad thing. It helps you motivate. It helps you get to the next level. And sometimes I think that's the best way to get things done when you're on a hard deadline and you have to deliver and you know you can see beyond that deliverable. That's a good stress and that's a big motivational factor. So going back to your question about how to deal with it, I think there are a few things that can be done. Like as leaders of the organization, we definitely have to recognize between what is a burnout versus what is a stress, right? Burnout, the key things that I can think of burnout is when your most happiest employees are quiet and not as cheerful. that's a big indication that something is not right.
When I think about things that we can do to help with this, I also think communication becomes even more critical. When I think about an employee who is sitting there feeling alone, trying to get something done and the support isn't there, if we communicate our expectations, then the others can jump in a little more easily, or the expectations of, hey, I'm going to need you to be available at this time to help out with this thing or take the ball and run with it. And sometimes it's that simple little thing that goes from, okay, I'm alone here because I think, you know, everyone else is off doing their thing and here I am. And no, someone's actually going to be here to help me or knows that I need help because I've made it clear what I'm looking for and when I need that, because it's just not physically as obvious to people what might be happening with their coworkers. So for me, communication is paramount too.
Yeah, can I add that even before communication, planning and prioritizing as leaders is even more important, right? And communication would go only to the certain extent where you've previously planned out the project, the task, or the deliverables. And another thing that personally has helped me in my team is a buddy system. When you have, for example, the one you were just talking about, that if you communicate that you have to be available, having somebody there as a buddy to support you and be available all the time. They may not be working on the same task or the deliverable, but that social support really helps in communicating better and having that support there for somebody.
And I love that you talk about that planning and prioritization as well, because I agree, you can work in chaos differently when you can see and sort of find your way through to the next step. But when there's a good plan and expectations and everyone knows when they're on and need to hand over and things are feeling more orderly and less chaotic, that reduces overall the stress and usually helps you find the cleanest line to getting through things rather than a lot of extra waste coming in along the way.
And clarifies the expectations also and makes it more realistic. Even though the work might be a lot, but when you really know what the expectation is, you make it realistic. You work towards it. So having that prioritization set up, spending a little bit extra time ahead of the game is always making smoother the execution of the game.
And I think for me, along with that, one of the observations I've made then is project management skill set has become even more critically important than what it used to be in the past.
When I started in finance and accounting, we were just a back office doing the numbers game. Nowadays, CFOs are not just the back office guy, right? They are the strategic business partners, and the entire C-suite and the company relies on you. So if you yourself are ahead of the game by doing the right planning and prioritization, there's nothing that can stop you from delivering and from yourself and from the team and eliminating the burnout.
So let's switch gears just a little bit. In your experience, who do you think is most susceptible to burnout?
I'll answer this in a few ways. So I think one of the things which people don't realize is in the CFO org, there are different teams. And each team has their rush hour or peaks and valleys on deliverables. Accounting is closing the books. So month end close, quarter end close is their rush time, right? FP&A is doing, if it's a public company, the guidance, investor relation is doing the guidance. So after the close is their rush time. So each team is susceptible to burnout, but at different levels. And if we go further into identifying like men versus women, right? I do feel women are more susceptible to burnout because no matter what, in their mind, they still have that mentality of being the caregiver, either at home or that maternal feeling comes in. Even at work, right? When somebody's not going through a good time, it's, I at least feel it's tendency of women to come in and, you know, talk it out, help out, that makes them more vulnerable to being burnt out. So I do feel keeping a close eye on your teams and how they are reacting to certain situations can help you or can help the teams be not more susceptible to burnout. But women in general, I feel the same way that women should be focused a little bit more on identifying and helping them with burnout.
And what do you think are some of those warning signs that we should be looking out for?
I think the first one, like I said, was, you know, the most happy employee in your team is all of a sudden very quiet. So that should be the first sign. But other than that, you know, low morale, being cynical and not showing up for work in their full self, not confident in what they used to be doing. These are some outside alerts that you can take note of. But internally also, like, you know, the quality of work is going down. They are not as quick in decision making or ending up making wrong decisions, incorrect analysis, things like that in terms of some soft skills also should be noted that, hey, something is not right with this employee.
And obviously those warning signs that you talk about, they start to lead to a sense of job satisfaction and how the employee is feeling. What do you think then are the correlations between that and eventual turnover or quiet quitting that we're hearing so much about now?
Quiet quitting, especially in the last 2 years and in the accounting industry, is so common. I think one of the things that's happening is, especially with the hybrid environment, I guess, I don't know if this is a result of the pandemic or what's going on, but people are not as open and vocal about their feelings. They think that, okay, I don't really, you're in a Zoom meeting. You can't really talk too much about your feelings. You're there to deliver something and that's it. It's very task oriented nowadays. So being open, giving the opportunity to employees to talk about things, you know, just check on them, check on their personal life. What did they do over the weekend? And if they were like, oh, I didn't, you know, I just didn't do anything, you know, encourage them to get out more. These are different things that will help them. But obviously, you know, checking on them is going to give you early signals on if this guy or girl is going to quit on me very soon, right? So having that conversation, even though we say it's always open door policy, but really say what you preach, right? So you have to follow that yourself. Mean it when you say open door policy.
The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the intelligent platform for complete planning. Vena's award-winning platform makes financial and operational planning more efficient, unlocks performance, and increases financial intelligence across the business, so finance teams and business leaders can plan for anything. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
Say what you preach, right? So you have to follow that yourself. Mean it when you say open door policy.
I also think about even things like vacations and making sure employees are in fact getting a chance to take those vacations and even encouraging breaks during the day. It's really easy to sit in a same chair. I know I've done this myself where you come to the end of the day and you go, oh my goodness, I've been sitting stationary in the same place all day. And so even it's as simple as sometimes when you're on a meeting and somebody will say, did you know it's really nice outside? Get out there and have a look. And, you know, going for a little walk or just finding a way to go and break up the day, I think is important too. Stepping outside, getting some fresh air. It can be some simple things. Getting, just stopping staring at the camera and the screen for too many hours in the day.
That's what is called Zoom exhaustion, right? I think that's one thing which I myself have adopted and also encourage my teams. Hey, if you're not presenting in a meeting, step out, take it from your phone, walk while you're doing the meeting or, you know, after lunch, or just go out, take a quick round the block and, you know, just check on different things. Summer is a beautiful season. Go look at the flowers. There's nothing that stops you from stepping out and getting up and going. It's just you have to genuinely make an effort to do it.
You mentioned earlier some of the seasonality of work, and you're absolutely right. It's like a relay race sometimes within finance where it goes from one team and this wave is making its way almost nonstop at somewhere in the team that somebody's in their seasonal peak and their valley. And I think that it's important to recognize that and also celebrate when we are not in our peak stress time as a team and recognize that, because I think it's really easy to paint with one broad brush. We're really busy getting the books closed. We're really busy getting the budget ready. We're really busy processing the payroll. And it's important to recognize who is, but also not wear that uniformly across finance that it's always at this peak. And when you get to the other side of some of the projects, celebrate that it's done and that you actually can take the chance to recharge, and it's okay to step back a bit and it doesn't have to be at the same pace as before. What are your thoughts there or any other suggestions around that and the seasonality?
So as you know, our jobs are a very thankless job, right? Until unless there is a problem, nobody knows accounting and finance exist. Right. So when teams are really killing it and getting through the month and close, recognize them, appreciate them, and let them have a day off after the last close, after the finance review is done. You'd be empathetic about it. Similarly, when there are budget cycles, FP&A is on top of everything. They're trying to get all the departments together. Once the budget is rolled out, let them take the day off. Not every team needs to be on a high all the time, right? Accounting has its days. FP&A has its days. Ops has its days. So recognizing the peaks and valleys and asking people to take time off during the low time is an important thing. And that also calls for having a good backup plan. Ultimately, we are closing books, doing financials. We are not making rockets here. Nothing will happen if you are off for one day. Have a good backup plan and you'll be fine.
Planning vacations in advance so people know what the expectations are of one another and that it's been well planned. I also find that can either create or save stress within the team when you are thinking ahead.
When planning, no matter what, you have to have backup plan documentation. That itself is a big step in, you know, streamlining and processing. Finance, accounting, operations, it's all about people, process, and technology. The more you leverage these things, the less of a burnout situation you will have.
Now, one of the other things that can be done to help with this is setting boundaries. How do you think finance leaders can help their teams with setting boundaries?
Okay, I have a great example here. So, and this happened to me also. I did not set up enough boundaries for myself. And that kind of came down to my team also. So you have to be the cheerleader for the team. If you don't do these things, your teams are going to think that, hey, my boss expects this from me, so I cannot do that, right? So setting boundaries with your C-suite, with the CEO, and say that, hey, even if it is like I have commute during 6 to 7 every night, I cannot respond to it. That's okay. But be proactive. Let the other people know and they'll be fine. Nobody is going to come and say, no, I want you to do this thing at 6:30 only. Nobody is going to do that. We are ultimately all humans. So having that expectations up front is very important. And you have to be the role model doing that. I'll give you an example. This was very early in my career. And I used to commute 40, 45 minutes. and my kids were very, very little. So their daycare would close at 6 p.m. And at my work, I said to my boss that, hey, no matter what, I have to leave at 5. Otherwise, I can't pick up my kids. During that 5 to 6 hour, nobody pinged me. Nobody asked for anything. It was like me time forced into it, which I loved. And since then, I've always set those boundaries. So recognizing what you need as a person, as a human being, and setting those boundaries is super important.
Another key skill that is becoming even more critically important as we get increasing demands and maybe fewer resources is prioritization. How much do you think that factors in, and what tips do you have for finance leaders to help their teams with developing those prioritization skills?
You really have to understand how important is this project task deliverable. So look at the big picture first. Is this something that's going to break or make my business, right? That's coming up from the helicopter view. Or is this something which, if I don't deliver, I'm going to miss a deadline, maybe an SEC deadline? So identifying projects at that level, looking from the helicopter view and from a bottoms-up approach, is super important. And prioritizing at that level. Is this a pet project of my CMO because he's just curious how the project is going to be or how the numbers line? Or is this something that's really going to make my business run a different direction, right? Obviously, not everybody has the visibility to those things, but stepping back and identifying the work and your workload and identifying what's the impact. And this comes in to your point about communication, right? That if we communicate to our teams the right benefit, the impact of the work we are doing, that will help them prioritize and also keep them motivated. Work with your leaders, work with your managers, and identify the impacts of each of the tasks and deliverables you have. And that will already simplify your prioritization.
Absolutely agree. It is so critically important that we be prioritizing our work. I often find myself with the team as things are coming up or we're working on a task, asking them, is this in the A drawer, the B drawer, or the C drawer right now? And really just coming down to, if it's A drawer, it should be something we're spending our energy on now. We're getting it done because it's critically important. But if it really could go in that B or C drawer because it's not urgent at this time, we really got to remember that we put it in the drawer and we're not spending our time working on the things that don't matter now. We'll get to those drawers later, maybe C drawer, maybe never. But it's really, just for me, an important way to help make sure that the things we're working on are the ones that are really going to help move the needle at the current time.
I love that analogy. And I'll tell you a similar way that I think of it is identifying need to have or good to have, right? Anything that is going to make a difference in your financials, maybe something we need to have. And anything that's going to make a difference in how those financials are put together or how do we get to that financials, maybe a good to have. So stepping back and thinking it through that, oh, if I don't do this, my SEC deadline is going to lapse and I'll be in trouble. Or if I do this way, I'll be able to do something better, right? So identifying those two things and separating, like you said, on your A drawer, B drawer, and C drawer is super important. Like that helps in prioritization of lots of things, daily tasks and projects.
Yeah, I think we all need a simple way to just check ourselves. Is the stuff I'm working on right now the thing that I should be, or where does it rank in the prioritization?
Yes, agreed.
Now, we've talked about ways to identify when burnout might be happening. Once you've identified that that is there, What are some of the ways to overcome the burnout?
If you've read Elon Musk's book by Walter Isaacson, I think the one thing which he says there is, first, make sure the requirements on any process are known and question the requirements. Delete unnecessary stuff. If the requirement does not have an answer, it's not really a requirement, right? Delete everything that's not a requirement, simplify, and then automate. And I love, love this approach. So, and that can be applied on ourselves too, right? We generate a report. We do that because it's been done for X number of years. Okay, if I don't send the report, will I have people coming shouting and asking for the report? If not, that's an unnecessary task that doesn't need to be there, right? So having that methodical approach in any activity you do is going to be super helpful. Automation, getting rid of any of the mundane tasks, all of these. And also one important thing is provide the resources and help when it's needed. Like, for example, during an audit time, right? Auditors are right up there and asking so many questions. We still have our day job to do, but in addition to that, we have to answer to the auditors. So get some additional help, third-party help. So these are some ways: automate, simplify, and get the help that your teams need. Yes, you are there to, you know, not put in more dollars. You are supposed to be as frugal as possible. But if it is going to make things efficient and productive for your team, go for it. You have the right to do it.
We've shared a lot of great ideas on how leaders can help their teams. Let's turn now to the CFO themselves. How do you think that CFOs can help themselves to avoid burnout?
I'll share with my first personal experience. So for me, a couple of years ago, when I did go through burnout, I just didn't know what to do about it. And somebody just told me, you know, do mindfulness, do these exercises, do that. You have to try and test what works for you. So I finally joined hot yoga, which has been amazing, amazing for me. So that's one way, like, you know, recognizing first that it is burnout. It's not just stress. When you're demotivated, you are like, okay, you're not excited to get up and go to work. That's the first sign that something is not right. So first would be recognize that this is burnout and identify what works for you. For some people, it may be doing a sport or doing a team sport, you know, that might be their way out of dealing with this. Taking care of yourself is one of the biggest things that we as individuals, I have ignored for last 10, 15 years. But now I've realized that it's important. No matter where you are in life, it's important to take care of yourself. The other thing is having boundaries, like we discussed. Yes, there are, I've dealt with founders and CEOs who are demanding, but you are their therapist. You have to approach the CFO role as a therapist. Like, you know, you're there to listen to them, give them sound advice based on data and numbers, and tell them, yes, this is what I think, this is what I do not think. And set those expectations and boundaries. I have not heard anybody coming and saying that, hey, if you are just listening to me, not giving me any information, you're not a good CFO or a good finance leader. Everybody is ultimately a human, and they do have that empathetic side of them that comes out when you approach it from that perspective. And delegation, I can't stress enough on delegation. We tend to try and do things ourselves. This is my Excel report or my baby that I want to do it myself. It'll be faster if I do it versus I have to go train. Yes, acknowledge that. But ultimately, you have bigger fish to fry. You have to think bigger. Let the people in your team who you have hired take on that task. They are there for a reason.
I worked with a leader once who used to say, it's just like on an airplane, you put on your own oxygen mask first, because that's the only way you can help others. And the things you're describing, we have to remember to put on that oxygen mask and make sure that we're in an okay place in order to be able to help support our teams.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So one last question for you. What overarching advice would you have for CFOs who are feeling stretched on resources right now and want to know the first two or three things they should do to get started here?
Of course, taking care of yourself is one biggest thing which I've learned over the years. But secondly, use technology. I don't think CFOs are leveraging so much technology that's available out there. There are so many tasks that we can just automate. Use technology to its full advantage. Simplify the processes and step back and look at your team and their workload. I think that's the best way you can really be a good leader, a mentor, and help them grow. Doing small steps itself can help quite a lot. I'm a big proponent of processes, technology, and simplification. So I love using technology. I keep looking at different CFO stack products that comes in the market and use it. They are there for a reason. Use it. Don't kill yourself or your teams.
I am a big proponent of using technology as well to make our lives easier and revisiting what maybe was working before, but there's new ways, there's better ways. And sometimes it's easy to just take for granted and keep doing things the way we've always done. Really, really enjoyed this conversation with you today. Thank you so much. Now, whenever we have guests on the show, we do have two rapid fire questions that we like to ask. So are you ready?
All right, go for it.
All right. The first one is, what is the best piece of business or leadership advice that you've ever received?
Listening. I would say listening is one of the best advice I have received, because you are a lot of times you're in situations where you know a lot, but pause, let the other people speak, listen, and then provide your comments. Like, I used to be a person who would be like, no, I know the answer. I know the answer. And the first to speak. So that's been a big game changer for me, listening.
Great piece of advice. The next question is, what is a book, and it can be business or personal, that has had a major impact for you?
So right now I'm reading the Elon Musk book. That is just amazing. I just love the passion. Each time I read the book, I come out and feel, yes, we can do it. Yes, we can do it. It's like an implied motivation. And people think he's a crazy guy, but I think he's an amazing person. And the fact that he goes down to the grassroots level and does things himself is super inspirational. So I've been loving reading his book.
Ruchi, really appreciated this conversation today. Thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Such a pleasure. It was such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
If you'd like to learn more about today's topic, please visit the links in the show notes. And we would love to hear from you, our audience. Tell us what you like and what you'd like to hear more of. Leave us a review on any of the streaming platforms. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to or watch your podcasts, because you don't want to miss an episode. For the CFO Show, I'm your host, Melissa Howitson. Until next time.